for daily living. I was very pleased to receive an invitation to speak at a Midwest AA conference with the program format stating that I was to speak Sunday morning as an AA speaker with the theme to be on old-timer shares. The chairman opened the meeting with the usual statements and amenities, and my host rose to introduce me, and I was startled to hear him refer to me as a pioneer. And he quoted the page, part one, Pioneers of AA Stories, in our AA book as follows. Today, hundreds of additional AA members can be found who have had no relapse for 30 years. All of these, then, are the pioneers of AA. They bear witness that release from alcoholism can really be permanent. While it is true that society in general now has a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, nevertheless, at present, it reflects and presents us with complexities that may be beyond our purview and experience. There could be unanimity on the premise that keeping the program simple is the key and our spiritual cornerstone, and has to be a constant conscious state of mind if we are to be effective in dealing with the primary problem, the disease of alcoholism. Unfortunately, government, various agencies and institutions have only superficial information about AA, its basic tenets and objectives to recover and to save lives. Our program of recovery is designed for the alcoholic who wants it, rather than those who need it. However, many who are sent or come to us with ulterior motives and purposes find a new truth, discard old ideas and prejudices, and join us in the realm of the spirit. And so, as an active pioneer with 42 years of sobriety, I was delighted to share my experience and personal relationships with and about the founding members in the Cleveland and Akron area, historically known as the Cradle of AA. These early members gave me their unqualified and unconditional love and understanding, and through their unselfish efforts, guided me and sponsored me out of the depths of fear, physical agony, mental torture, spiritual starvation, desolation, and the hopeless condition of the suffering alcoholic. I will be eternally grateful to those early pioneers whose honesty, unselfish love and purity guided me through a series of spiritual experiences, awakenings, and the ultimate regeneration, thereby establishing a personal relationship with the God of my understanding. Upon reflection, I find myself ever returning to those moments of truth, the benchmarks of my release from alcoholism, to relive the events and time and the mystical forces that brought about my recovery, the gift of a second life. In these latter years, there has been a conscious pursuit and ever-increasing appreciation of the real virtue of simplicity and purity, those qualities of both the heart and mind that is so strongly exemplified in a youthful, happy, and significant sober life. Whenever I have the opportunity to share my strength, experience, and hope with the group or from the speaker's lectern, I find a solid comfort and an ongoing deeper meaning and appreciation in relating the story of my recovery and how my sponsors patiently and lovingly explained and guided me through the 12 steps of our philosophy the spiritual concepts of the four absolutes, and the objectives for self-help. These early members knew the real thrill and joy in giving. They were living witnesses to the great fact that if thought, God could and would open the gates to wisdom and truth, and that great events would come to pass for those who would join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. Since I am one who has freely accepted that which was so freely given to me, I have a joyful obligation and a sense of urgency to carry the message and to pass on the time-tested experiences of those who have gone before to those that are to follow. And so it is with deep satisfaction that the new as well as old members are expressing an interest and a hunger for the basic spiritual guides and principles that were so successfully implemented by our founding members. Today, as never before, the pioneers, old-timers, or any sober practitioners of the spiritual principles willing to share their experiences are needed to show the way through love and understanding to those strangers and newcomers seeking the precious gift of sobriety. Admittedly, it is a very personal matter and a difficult task to articulate the spiritual concepts that are manifested through and by the grace of God, that we may live in harmony with His will. However, on this morning, I ask for the indulgence of the conscience to offer a comprehensive interpretation of what it was like, what happened, and why those noble ideals of love and service are as valid today as they were in the beginning. And it is to this theme that I shared my experiences. My release from the disease of alcoholism began with a 12-step call carrying a message that alcoholism was a treatable disease and that only a honest and sincere desire was needed to stop drinking. And if I would yield and give myself to the program as they had, a wonderful life would be mine. And I was amazed at their claims. However, intuitively, I knew that they spoke the truth. And I willingly moved from my isolation to accept their fellowship in a new and unbelievable way of life. By the sharing process, I now related, identified, and accepted without reservation the unmanageability, powerlessness, and insanity of my disease of alcoholism. I had now complied both in mind and heart with steps 1 and 2, and so the first phase of my recovery was now in place. The second phase of my recovery began at the completion of about 4 months of sobriety. And while I was deeply grateful for this reprieve, I was suffering from unmanageability and the compulsion that was stimulated by my physical addiction. I had diligently practiced the HALT system, H-A-L-T, of not getting too hungry, too angry, too lonesome, or too tired. However, doubts and feelings of impending doom were now creeping in, and the moment of truth was at hand. My desire and the spiritual energy of the group that had aided and abetted me in attaining and maintaining my sobriety for these past 4 months was waning. The awful truth was that sobriety was not enough. A conference with my group and sponsors revealed that it was time to undergo a spiritual regeneration that would result from a series of spiritual experiences as set forth in each of the steps 3 through 9. And in concert with my sponsors and the reinforcement of the group, the spiritual exercises would and did remove the barriers between myself, my fellow man, and the God of my understanding. The compulsion was now diffused, and my life was now manageable. I had indeed established a consciousness and a relationship with a loving God. I was now enjoying my new life and participating in the rewards and benefits of the 12 promises. And so the second phase of my recovery was now in place. The third phase of my recovery began with confidence and enthusiasm. I had achieved a level of comfort and emotional stability. The compulsion had been removed. I was now achieving positive results in all of my affairs. That group of steps, 3 through and including 9, had indeed dealt with the solutions, and good orderly direction from my higher power would now guide me through the future. I had admitted my faults to God and my fellow man, cleared away the wreckage of the past, and entered the world of the Spirit. I was anxious to maintain, grow, and improve my conscious contact with a loving God. And so I embraced and implemented the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th steps as a method to maintain and improve my spiritual health and condition. I understood that separately each of these steps provided relief and benefits so that we could live happily and successfully. However, in spite of my apparent success in living with sobriety, something was missing. I frequently wondered about God's guidance and will. And do we ignore human wisdom and intellect? Can God really direct you in a practical rather than a vague general way? I shared my confusion with other members and was surprised to find that I was not alone in my quandary. There were some that accepted the notion that what was happening at the moment was God's will, and some that God's will was to be expressed through others. Even the occult and exotic philosophies had been tried to no avail. I was uneasy and felt that I had reached an impasse or plateau in my spiritual development. Shortcomings and defects were cropping up. Inexperience and improper use of the will was leading me to rely more and more on my own intellect and reason. No matter how objective I tried to be, my efforts to cope were far from satisfactory. Also, I had observed others at this point in the program who became bored or ignored or lost interest in further actions and information. Their enthusiasm waned, meetings were curtailed, some strayed away and were lost forever. The axiom of willingness to go to any lengths came to mind. If we have been painstaking about the first and second phases of our recovery, it will come as no surprise that dealing with life from our own viewpoint, at best, obscures the truth and blinds us to reality. And those of us that have relied on our human judgment and wisdom have failed in knowing and carrying out God's will. In keeping with our philosophy of one day at a time, careful consideration should be given to steps 10, 11, and 12 as a plan for living one day at a time. And so if we are to formulate a plan for living daily, we should in all humility acknowledge the greatest gift of love that God gave man as a gift of a free will. However, if we are to reach for and strive for a lofty set of moral standards and noble ideals, we recognize that the proper use of our will is needed to practice the spiritual concepts of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity. The four absolutes that are the guideposts to the finest and highest objectives known to mortal man. In essence, then, the plan for daily living should consider the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps dealing with our inventory, meditation, and prayer to be related, interwoven, and directly linked as a group rather than to be practiced separately. It has been well said that intelligence is discipline. We are determined to embrace the daily plan that we may move towards and realize our spiritual objectives. The tenth step, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, served as a safety valve and enabled me to preserve good relationships with others. Restitutions and amends were made if needed. There was no question about keeping the past cleaned up. However, I knew that I needed to go further, and more action and information would be required if I was to know and carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. The third phase of my recovery deals with the daily inventory, meditation, and prayer that provides a method and structure to guide us from a consciousness of God to a conscious contact with God, that we may know His will and direction to establish and strive for a set of absolute moral standards. We begin by reviewing the experiences of the day, the things we did that we are ashamed of, and the things that we should have done and didn't, the errors of commission and omission. We are careful to avoid moral introspection, self-deceit, and rationalization. The four absolutes offer a frame of reference that we can objectively analyze our conduct. Our failure to act in a loving manner results in hate and resentment. Failure to act in an unselfish way results in selfishness. Failure to act in an honest way results in falsity and deceit. Failure to act in a pure and simple manner results in manipulation and bad motives. The errors of commission are the direct result of the improper use of our will, with the shortcomings and defects reflecting the negative side of our nature. We ask God to remove our errors and to forgive us. The errors of omission are the direct result of lack of will and dedication and reflects apathy and complacency. Failure to use the guidepost of honesty, unselfishness, love and purity in all of our affairs creates a void quickly filled by our self-will, shortcomings, and defects. We are no longer living in and on the high moral standards and spiritual plane that once were our objectives. We are now convinced that no matter how resolutely we try to control our negative nature, the more self-centered we become. We are in need of strength, inspiration, and direction from God, who has all knowledge and power. At this point, the 11th step sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God. As we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out offers the information and action that will place us in the world of the Spirit, that we may meditate and pray that our apathy and complacency be removed. We recognize that our apathy and lack of willpower to practice the principles open the gates, and the negative side of our nature welcome the self-will, shortcomings, and defects, isolating us from God and our fellow man. My inventory revealed a shocking lack of will and dedication towards absorbing and applying the absolutes. And while I long for the guidance and strength coming from a union with God, it would only be through meditation and prayer that I would be given good, orderly direction to think and act in harmony with God's will. In preparation for effective meditation and prayer, we must place ourselves in a spiritual atmosphere and mood in which we can focus undisturbed on God's guidance and the way to go forward. We carefully read and recite the Serenity Prayer that expresses and surrounds us with a spiritual grace. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as he did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. We quietly purge the mundane and distractions of the day. It is then that our hearts and minds are cleared. And in thoughtful reflection, we review this beautiful prayer, drinking in every word and trying to visualize and understand its deeper meaning and inner essence. And so in the peace and quiet that follows our meditation, we pray to God for inspiration, decisions, and intuitive thoughts. A childhood ditty comes to mind. God has a plan, you have a part. When man listens, God speaks. When man obeys, God acts. God can show you what to do. In the silence, we have now begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit to us. We listen for the intuitive thoughts that come to us and wonder if they are truly thoughts from God. Now we can be sure that these thoughts are in line with the absolutes, honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity, and our real duties, family and country. No longer would I presume that certain intuitive thoughts to be from God and result in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. As a result of a structured inventory, meditation, and prayer, my confused thinking and motives had been cleared. My thought life was now on a higher plane. The 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message and practice the principles in all of our affairs. And in accordance with my meditation and prayers, I was now ready to use my mental faculties at God's direction to carry the message of love and service to other alcoholics. However, to know God's will and to practice the principles of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity in all my affairs, we pray that we be given whatever is needed to remove our apathy and complacency, that we may be free to practice these principles in harmony with God's will. The plan for living daily is not a one-time thing. Phase 3 of our recovery is to continue for our lifetime. We vigorously monitor our will to practice the principles, which represent our philosophy, while the absolutes represent our spiritual objectives in self-help, to place us in a new dimension for living by striving towards greater achievements and the qualities that the absolutes represent. We pray that we may grow in understanding and effectiveness in the constant and ceaseless search for truth, that we may become honest. The dedicated will to do that which is right, that will gain for us purity, the quality of both the heart and mind, or perhaps the soul of man. Unselfishness is our spiritual cornerstone, and we gain in proportion to the real health we give others. Love is beauty, the blood of the good life which keeps alive its worth and beauty, and is our medium to communicate with God and our fellow man. The art of living in truth and right is a fine art, and must be learned slowly and practiced with incessant care. The real virtue is in our striving for these absolutes. We pray for these things and sometimes forget these virtues must be earned. Remember our 4 questions. For honesty, is it true or false? For purity, is it right or wrong? For unselfishness, how will it affect the other fellow? For love, is it ugly or beautiful? Answering these queries every day and following the dictates of those answers one day at a time will surely lead us to the universal truth. When love is offered, God is there. And when love is honest, unselfish, and pure, then it is truly beautiful. And it is the way of love, the way of AA, and is the will of God as we understand it.